they have rights like anybody else, and they're being violated. So it's nothing to be scared of when you look at these charges. Again, we're not doing anything wrong. What we're doing is we're stepping up and we're protecting land and water. And so to us, that's not a crime. You know, crime is something of the nature of something heinous or so bad that you get the book thrown at you. But when we are standing up for, what we believe in, and also for what, like our burial sites that were desecrated, we have, that's our right to stand up for that. It doesn't scare people, to get arrested and have these charges slapped on us, because we go into it with no fear. So,
is that pretty much what you would say to people who are on the cusp of getting radically involved and joining y'all over there, trying to block the Dakota Access Pipeline, but are fearing reprisals and the legal ramifications of what would happen if they were to get arrested?
If they're thinking that, like, what if? The what if is really big right now, because one, everybody that's been arrested so far, that's the most that they've seen as far as cases come to Morton County in the last couple of years. They just don't have the resources to try and prosecute nearly 130 people right now. And we still have a few months left, until that permit ends. And so, that number could double. That number could kind of hover around this, maybe a few more. But either way, it's too many for Morton County to push and to think that they have the adequate needs or the staff to try and prosecute every one of these people. And so that's why we're telling people to still stay confident, because by the books and by these numbers, that they don't have the manpower. A lot of these cases, they haven't filed against these people, including myself, so my lawyers, is waiting for Morton County to come out and say what was her client accurately charged with, and they haven't come forth and said it's this and that. So, and that's the process with everybody that has been arrested. They just cannot pinpoint everything and make it hold. And so, but they're just trying to make a stature of let's arrest people and scare people that you do not come out and stand in alliance with the people that are here, because you will be arrested. They just want to fearmonger people. Mm-hmm. And to prevent them from coming out. Again, it's these things that they're trying to hold. And with that hold, they're trying to break people down. They're trying to break this movement down. So, but it won't happen.
So what I kind of hear you saying is that if people are deterred by the risk of arrest, the tactic of the state is actually working then. Like that's
state,
their wish.
The state's trying to work about, making this hold water. We see it as not holding water. And so to say that, that if that's your reasoning to not come out and, want to show support, I mean, you don't have to be arrested, You just want to be right there as far as a witness and say, I'm comfortable about being at these actions, but not being literally on these lands, maybe sitting in a vehicle and showing the support or coming out and standing for a little bit and, going back in the vehicle and getting warm again. I mean, that's fine. I mean, that we're not asking people to come out, and show support and say, well, okay, now you're unarrestable. That's not a requirement. If people just want to come out and show support for, a week or a half a week or something, I mean, that's their will and their right. And we will gladly accept those that, that want to come out and stand with us. So, but again, no, too, it's the state doesn't have a lot to hold on to when it comes to these charges. That's ridiculous that they can think that these charges will hold right now. I mean, You know, Amy Goodman was arrested, you know. Or, I mean, not arrested, excuse me. I mean, her warrant was pushed out the same as mine. You know, we're both on the same sheet, you know. But mm-hmm. she's a journalist, and she's doing her job. And they put an arrest warrant out for a person doing, you know, their job. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard of here in America. But you know what? Every now and then, America does get stupid, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I kind of want to shift to alliance and support. It's a question that we grapple with a lot at the station, especially us of color. And it seems like it's a really delicate issue. The question of, do you show up and provide support, material support, moral support, bear witness, do the things that are within your possibility? And a lot of people, I think, are unclear as to what the attitude is of First Nation peoples that are out there at the forefront of this fight. Do they want people of all walks of life to be there and show up with their bodies? Or would it be better for people, and I guess I'm specifically talking about like white people in this example, to lend their support in other ways that doesn't require their physical presence? Again, I guess another question packed in that, and I'm sorry this is so big, but how does the presence of white allies impact this movement in your eyes?
We are accepting of everybody. You know, we do not see Native versus non-Native as being an issue here. It's, you know, we are all stakeholders to Mother Earth, and it's our given right to defend what is so sacred to all of us. I mean, you know, that we've had people come from, you know, Australia and the United Kingdom and France and Spain, you know. I mean, as far as we're talking about, you know, talking about people from around the world, and we've been accepting of them, you know. The one concern that they have is can I be provided shelter and food, you know, because I'm literally coming out here by myself or, you know, with a friend, and we just don't have that, you know. We couldn't bring that on the plane, that, you know, that type of stuff. So we are accepting of everybody, and whether it's the coming out, you know, some people do come out and drop off goods, you know, that their friends or neighbors or whoever, you know, pull together, you know, warm supplies. I've met quite a few people, and they've come into camp, and, you know, they just said, hey, you know, I traveled. I just, you know, I want to camp here and just, you know, partake in this for a day or two. And that's fine. You know, that's okay. I mean, you know, we're accepting of everybody's donations and everybody's love and generosity. And, you know, if that means that you're there for a day or two, that's fine. If, like I said, we had a person come from the United Kingdom that's here until the 1st of January. And, you know, so there's commitments of long-term and short-term. And it's all acceptable. You know, it's fine.
I think a lot of people are curious as to, like, what the reality is on the ground in the camps. There are entire families there. How does this extended action impact children, for example?
A lot of the families that have come out here with kids, you know, everybody's talked to them about, you know, do not bring them on actions. You know, do not bring them to the front lines. You know, keep kids safe. A lot of the families have gone home with the kids to, you know, just keep them safe now, keep them warm. I mean, because, you know, they themselves weren't ready for, you know, the cold temperatures, and that can be provided when they're home, just because they have, you know, a home structure. And so, but there's still some kids that come out, but mainly on the weekends. You know, they come out to visit their aunts or uncles or, you know, grandmothers and grandfathers that are out, you know, at the campsites. And so so we've seen the decline of kids being present at the camp during the week, just due to the fact that, you know, they've now gone home to wherever home is. But a lot of kids will show back up with their families, you know, on the weekends, you know, to spend time with other family members. You know, we're making sure that nobody goes without a warm meal and the necessary items to keep warm, you know, such as wool blankets or warm sleeping bags. And so, yes, we definitely, you know, will provide and try to provide with the most that we can give from the items that, you know, have been donated and bought, you know, for people at these camps.
You've been described pretty widely by a lot of media sources of various varieties and leanings as the leader of the Red Warrior Camp. How do you see yourself? How would you describe your role in the camp and in this larger effort?
No, I you know, yeah, there are quite a few leads as far as, you know, as a position title. I don't take any real position title. I speak. I'm kind of that buffer zone between those that want to help, you know, with people at the camp and sharing the necessary information with people about what needs the campers, you know, are asking for, but also kind of that liaison a little bit between the press and, you know, to make sure that our narrative is being spoken in the most accurate way and correct way, because, you know, we're not villains. You know, we're not unlawful. We are peaceful and we're prayerful, you know, but we're also, you know, finding through liberation the necessary means to strive, you know, for the fight for our, you know, our civil liberties and our civil freedoms, you know, still to this day, and to be seen as equal.
Our attention spans tend to be short, especially when it comes to the media. So I'm hoping that this will bring everyone back in and everyone can keep paying attention and feel more empowered to take part if that's what they want to do.
Yes. We do. We've always, you know, even our campers, you know, don't have a lot of reception, or, you know, if they do, they just, you know, keep in touch with their families. You know, but as I, you know, you reach out to me and I give you interviews and along with every other place, you know, around the country, you know, I'm always expressive to say thank you so much for the love and support and the generosity of people that have, you know, come forward and donated items. And, you know, like I said, the biggest part of that is I always say, you know, it's cold. And what would you do to stay warm, you know? How would you dress yourself? You know, how would you shelter yourself? And if it was with a group of people, you know, how would you kind of put yourself in that role of you know, helping and providing and looking after? You know, that's exactly what, you know, we're doing here at these camps and stuff. You know, like I said, you know, wool blankets, warm gear, you know. Snow pants, everything, anything insulated that, you know, it keeps people, you know, their morale up. And, you know, I'm very thankful for the hundreds to thousands of people that have donated, you know, items, even as minimal down to a letter, you know, a letter of support and thanking all the water protectors for, you know, for what they're doing. You know, I share these with, you know, with the medic people and, you know, the herbalists that we have on, you know, on staff, and they love those. They like, you know, they like to hear those things, and it's just encouraging to them to know that outside of, you know, of this encampment area, that a lot of people are looking after them, and they, you know, it just, you could just see it. It brings smiles to their faces, and it just rejuvenates them. So I thank you guys so much.
And that was KBOO reporter Kanan Schlesinger speaking with organizer and spokesperson for Red Warrior Camp at Standing Rock, Cody Hall. Stay tuned. You're listening to KBOO Radio, and coming up next, we have Preference Radio.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Sex and Broadcasting, will play Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. Sex and Broadcasting is a documentary about the revolutionary independent radio station WFMU and its station manager, Ken Friedman. The film explores the question of how to do interesting, cool, culturally significant radio and internet broadcasting while being a sustainable institution.
I just want there to be a WFMU. I want WFMU to exist as a place where people can go who don't fit in, where people can go to find things that have been hidden.
Again, that's Sex and Broadcasting, Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the film screening Paying the Price for Peace, the story of S. Brian Wilson, on Friday, October 21 at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Vietnam veteran S. Brian Wilson was run over and nearly killed by a military train during a nonviolent protest in 1987. Since then, he has not stopped calling attention to the endless illegal wars being waged by the United States. Again, that's Paying the Price for Peace, the story of S. Brian Wilson, on Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And again, you're listening to KBOO Radio, Portland. Coming up next, we have Preference Radio. This program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from RadioCab, the transportation choice of Portlanders since 1946, with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. RadioCab is a mobile app that allows you to book a cab with your phone, available at the App Store, Google Play, or at radiocab.net. Or, if you prefer, you can talk to a real person at 503-227-1212. This program has also been made possible by Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services